Hello, this is John Bissett, producer and editor of the podcast. Unfortunately, we ran into some technical problems during the recording of this episode, so the audio isn't as clear as previous episodes. This has been fixed for the future, so I apologise and hope you still enjoy today's episode. Thanks again for tuning in.
Welcome to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production. Hi, I'm Carol Bissett, a crime writer, and I invite you with my co-presenters, Liz Hedgecock and Mike Jackson, each week to our conversations on all things murderous. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Only Murders in My Mind. And as usual, I have the magnificent Liz Hedgecock.
Ooh, thank you.
Hello.
Mike gets sat in the corner, Mike Jackson.
You notice it's just Mike. Not the magnificent Mike, though, nor the wonderful Mike Jackson. Him sat in the corner.
Oh, we all know you're wonderful.
Hello, both of you.
And today we're very lucky. We've got a guest star, a writer and a business lady generally, Susie Bussell. Hi, Susie.
Hello, everybody.
It's lovely to speak to you. And I know Liz knows your work.
I do, well. Indeed.
Yes. I've got to be honest, I did Google you to get some information. However, you've now got a converted fan. I downloaded a sample of your book and I've bought it.
Thank you very much.
And I'll be buying the others if this is anything to go by. So, you know, you've got better sales just for coming on our podcast.
Excellent.
There you go. Well, I'll go super see fan.
Go while you're winning, Susie.
No. I really like the two characters, Angus and Charlotte. And stupid me, I'm going, why is it called EXE? It's Exeter, isn't it? Because it's in Exeter.
Could you tell us a bit about your series?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So I write mysteries and they're set in and around Exeter and other parts of Devon as well. The titles of the books always have EXE, which is the river that flows through Exeter and obviously out to Exmouth. So it's a private detective series, contemporary, and they're basically two characters, one in a female who is in her sort of mid-40s, approaching perimenopause, and she's a cybersecurity expert. And then the other character is Angus Darrow, and he is an ex-police officer who is a private investigator in Exeter. And Charlotte sort of attaches herself to him.
I think that's a fair assessment.
Yeah. it's about each sort of book is, it's kind of a bit like a TV show. Each book is a bit like a sort of an hour episode of a series, I would say. So they're not the longest books you're ever going to read, but there are certainly lots of sort of escapades, and they flow quite fast. It's been really good to write about where I know as well.
Yeah,
specific area.
I think that's why I took to your book, because I looked at it and I thought these are about the same length as my detective books. A lot going on as you turn your pages. Lots of action and, you know, information. So brilliant.
Yeah, they are proper fast paced. And I like, because I know Exeter reasonably well, even though I live up here. And I like that there's, you know, places I can think, I know that place, I've been there. So do your readers talk about that? Do you have lots of kind of Devon-based readers?
I do. And that wasn't my aim. My aim wasn't to sort of get everybody in Devon reading my book, but interestingly,
it's a pretty good aim, I think.
Well, I mean, it is. I do get a lot of people commenting saying they know the places and they're really happy that there's a series that is set where they know. So that I do get a lot of readers in the local area, but I get lots of other people who have visited Exeter and Devon, and they read it as well because they sort of want to revisit that. And obviously, Exeter has a university. which has a lot of graduates who some have read it as well. So, yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's, that's really and good. It's a lovely part of the world as well. So
yes, yeah. It's like Death in Paradise, only not like Death in Paradise.
Yeah, isn't Beyond Paradise sent somewhere in the West Country?
It is. Yeah, 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 it's down. I mean, people always, well, people that don't live there obviously associate where you live as holiday destinations, don't they? That area.
Yes.
And people, and the number of people, it's like the Lake District where we live in Cheshire. You know, you go, oh, I'd love to live in the Lake District. And I have people that go on holiday in your area go, I'd love to live down there. It looks, it's beautiful. So, yeah, I can understand that.
Susie, so, with your two main characters, are they both computer specialists or?
No, so only one is a computer specialist because that would be a bit of a boring story if you had but two computer experts talking to each other. One's a technophobe and the other one's a cybersecurity expert. So,
right.
Yeah.
I like the kind of the odd couple dynamic in that you have Charlotte, who's always like, let's hack it. And Agnes is like, you know, how do I do this on my phone again?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I've only just met Charlotte, but I do like her a lot. And the lady that came in and made them tea and croissants, you know, she said, oh, she's my cleaner, did she?
Yes, Helena, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But look, yes, but looking after her. You know, shouldn't have these men in your room.
Exactly.
I think she sees herself as an unofficial chaperone.
She does. I get that feeling. But all I say, I've read about five or six chapters and already connecting with these characters. And can I just say, the bit about the young man that's gone missing, who's on the spectrum, real insight there. Thought that was absolutely brilliant. You nailed that. I don't know where you got your research from. And the other one was, I'm just trying to think now, there was another bit in it and I thought, it'll come to me. There was another bit and I thought, oh yes, I know what it was. The students, when he went to talk to the students, their reaction to him. Now, I train people for a living and I went to a college somewhere in the Northwest. Can't remember if it was last year or the year before. That's exactly the reaction I got. They were all like looking at the phones and like, who is this person? Why don't they just go away? So I empathised with Angus there. Absolutely. But you see, you deal with students, don't you, by the sounds of it?
Yeah, my day job is teaching. So, yeah, I know how young people react to older people. I have teenage children as well, so that always helps too. So it's quite helpful to use some of the sort of ways they are with people to put in the books. And actually there's one of the later books, I've got a teenager who's on a video game, and I wanted to sort of write some text about him on that video game, and I wasn't quite sure what to write, and I just listened in on my son and literally copied what he said as he sort of spoke to a friend that he was gaming with online, and so I haven't told him that yet, but
oh, thanks for that.
Share of the royalties, you know.
That's a good hint, actually. You do that, don't you, John? Play games online, not, you know.
Yeah.
So the other one that I think it's just come up for pre-order are the Jane Austen Tea Room Mysteries. It's a new thing for you?
Yeah, so it's just actually came out on the 1st of August. So
we can buy it.
Oh, new release.
You can buy it now, yes. It's totally different. So my extra books are all lots of cybersecurity and very fast-paced private investigator. My new series is a paranormal cozy crime set also in Devon. In Sidmouth, in Devon. And it's very different. It's basically set around a Jane Austen Regency themed tea room, because Jane Austen visited Sidmouth in 1801 as part of her sort of holiday. She also went on the same holiday to Lyme Regis and to Dawlish. And obviously Lyme Regis is quite famous. If there's any fans of Jane Austen listening, she was part of Persuasion, her last novel, was set in Lyme Regis, and it's the same trip that she went on when she just moved to Bath and then went on holiday. And and she apparently met and fell in love with someone in Sidmouth who unfortunately he died. He had to go go away, and he died. So apparently she was quite heartbroken, but there's not much about it because all the letters around that time were destroyed by her sister, Cassandra. So we don't know too much about it.
Oh, right. So you've got free license there to...
Why the change, Susie? It seems a real contrast from the...
It does. Yes. Well, I do have... It is very different. Yeah, I started writing that book, the Tea Room, one in Sidmouth, just as something completely different. And you get to the point where you kind of have to think, well, I'm either need to carry on or I'm going to try and publish this. So I just thought, I'm just going to try and publish it. And yes, it's very different. But so far, the small amount of feedback I've had is the readers who like my extra books like the Tea Room books as well. So, but yeah, I am going for very different markets for those because I'm sort of going for the US market with the Jane Austen theme, whereas the extra books are really very much aimed at the UK market.
Because you've done the same thing, haven't you? You went from writing. Liz went from writing historical sort of murder mysteries, and you did some cozy murder mysteries, and you've done some with ghosts in as well, haven't you? I mean,
yes,
I love them.
I think one of the nice things about being an independent author, and you're an independent author as well, Susie, aren't you?
One of
the nice things is that you can basically write what you like. Yes. And you don't have a contract saying you have to write this book and only this type of book and sort of thing.
If you're doing, I mean, this is to Liz and to Susie, really. If that's what you're doing, do you have to be careful not to alienate one audience compared to another? For example, with Susie, with all your computer modern books, are you looking for a different audience for your Jane Austen ones, or do you think there'll be some crossover?
I think there'll always be a little bit of crossover because there's people who just like the style of my writing and like my books. But I think, I am going for very different markets. I'm definitely aimed at the US market.
Yeah, but I think readers are more resilient and they will read a wider range of stuff than people give them credit for.
Yes.
I mean, yes, there are people who will say, I only read serial killer thrillers. Hmm. And you think, wow, that's an interesting choice to make. I've found that, I didn't expect that people who read my historical would also read, for example, my cozy or my ghost suspense or, read the stuff with a magical bookshop in it. But a surprising amount of them do. So and I think if they like you, they will try what you
write. That's
what
I was going to say then. Yeah. It's on the back of what your fan base that like you and like what you write to start with. Do you think that's the case, Susie?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I do intend to carry on with the extra books, and I do have other story ideas for more sort of technology based sort of suspense books, so it's not something that I'm just disregarding. I just after sort of 4 or 5 years of writing the extra series, I wanted to try and just do something a little bit different. So
now I'm going to ask you what every writer gets asked: what got you into writing in the first place?
Well, I'm quite unusual. I feel like I'm quite unusual because lots of people always, or lots of writers always say, from the age of 3, when I could pick up a pen, I knew I was going to be a writer. And it wasn't like that for me at all, actually. I didn't start writing until I was 30, and I'm just in my early 50s now. So it wasn't something, where I thought, oh, I really want to be an author. Although the signs were there, because I actually remember being in primary school, looking out the window, being bored and hating school, but making up stories to try and pass the time in my head. And I would just constantly do that. And I can even remember when I was 14, thinking, there's something wrong with me, that I'm just making up these stories in my head. I've got to try and stop doing this, not realizing that that's what writers do. I went to university and, got a proper job and everything. And then it was J.K. Rowling, actually. It's her fault.
Good old J.K.
It was her inability to get the Harry Potter books out really quickly. And I was I got into writing Harry Potter fan fiction, actually. And that's how I started writing. because I could use other people's characters. I didn't have to think up my own characters. And what I wrote was absolutely atrocious, but it got me into writing. And then I quickly moved on to my own characters, and I wrote a couple of books after that, and then had a very long break, but started writing again in 2018.
And been very successful by the looks of all your figures on Amazon. Well done.
Thank you.
So what sparked the Lockwood and Darrow series? What was, yeah, did you have a germ of an idea, or did it kind of come to you fully formed? Or?
No, it was very piecemeal. So the Exeter series, it's called Lockwood and Darrow. The Exeter series, I teach computer science in my day job. I really wanted to try and teach mainly women, but maybe that's just because I'm a woman. I just wanted to teach adults some cybersecurity and some computing, and writing a sort of a factual book wasn't really something that I wanted to do. I wanted to try and incorporate it into fiction because that's what I love writing. So that's what I did. So the initial idea was to try and have a female cybersecurity expert who could put little bits of information in, real life information in, to a fictional story so that people could learn along the way. And all the sort of the technology in my books is real. So I don't make any sort of technobabble up like science fiction. I might sort of speed things up, but yeah, everything is real in it. And that was my main aim. And obviously I needed more than one character. And I had a private investigator because a close family member was a private investigator after being a policeman. And that sort of gave me the initial sort of spark of the idea of having a private investigator.
Yeah, I like this. I was having an IT. I'm sorry, I shouldn't use the word geek, but my whole family.
No, I don't mind.
My whole family are geeks, so you know I say it lovingly. But yeah, I've got one in my detective books. He's an IT, you know, sort of specialist that can get information from where he shouldn't and that sort of thing. I don't know. I am IT naive, so I just say the basic stuff, and anything else I have to ask my son about if there's any ever go any deeper. And I could tell from reading what I've read already that yours is coming from a knowledge-based background. So you've done that. You've hit that good mark.
So are you a plotter or a pantser?
Coming
in with the difficult questions here.
I'm predominantly a pantser. Yeah, I try to plot, and I have tried to plot, but I always just change it so completely. And I lose motivation, actually, if I plan too much. I'm just kind of like, well, I've planned it now. You know, what's the point in writing it? I've got the plan. So, the two-room books I've in Sidmouth, they have a little bit more planning, but I'm still pantsing most of it.
You were going to say something, weren't you?
Well, in some ways, I think Liz and Carol have been waiting for me to ask ask this question. I'm fascinated with the whole AI setup. So how much of that comes into your books?
Not much. Because they're all written before the generative AI that we all know now was released. So, it was... I don't use it a lot, and it's not something that I've put in them. I don't really intend to do too much about AI in it, although I listen to Joanna Penn's podcast a lot, and she's the creative pen, and she's always talking about it, and so I know what it's capable of. But we've all been using AI for a very long time.
Oh yes,
yeah. You know, it's just that the ChatGPT style that's new. So.
Mike is very passionate about it.
I think the whole area of AI is fascinating, and I think there's a whole area there for us to discuss, not today and maybe not even on the podcast, because I just upset people about the role of AI in writing. Something I talk about at our writers group sometimes, only because they're a nice, safe, friendly bunch and they won't beat me up.
That's what they want you to think, Mike.
From my perspective as a techie, I know, and I write in the programming language that, for example, ChatGPT and a lot of the generative AI is written in. And I studied it even, you know, sort of 30 years ago at university. So I know, and it has, so it has been around that long, if not longer. But I think what frustrates me is a lot of people don't understand how it works. They just think it's copying and pasting, and it really isn't. And, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you're so right, because I hear so many people say to me, well, it's plagiarism. And I say, no, it can't be. It's not scraping words from, it's just using words and putting them, or tokens, as they're called, and just putting them together with some very sophisticated algorithms.
Yeah,
I think the biggest threat from AI is that we're just going to end up with everything being very mediocre. I think, you know, and because they're running out of data to feed into the AI engines, and it's, yeah, everything just tends to be a bit average. So I think writers shouldn't be worried in the fact that we're going to be able to come up with more ideas as humans than, and AI might be able to write quicker than us, but we're going to be able to come up with those really good ideas. And that's what we need to concentrate on.
And the older you get, the more ideas you have. Isn't that right? Well, everybody in the room nods.
I mean, I do find something like, because I think you've used this, Susie, if I'm not mistaken, that's 11 Labs to do some of the voiceovers. Some sophisticated stuff happening there. And I've been taking some short stories and using 11 Labs to have those narrated.
Yes. Yeah, I've used AI voice to put some free a short story on my YouTube channel and a chapter of one of my books, because humans are so expensive to narrate.
So, darn humans, eh?
Yes. So it's, yeah, the audio AI is absolutely amazing now.
Yeah. And it's only going to get more and more sophisticated.
More and more,
it's an area that we're going to have to keep coming back and discussing. I don't necessarily ask for, but I mean, generally, people have to come back and discuss this, because video is coming along, picture generation is very good, audio is very good. It's just going to get much, much better. And we'll open up all sorts of opportunities and fears for some people as well.
I think so.
I've got to mention the snowshoe cats.
Yes.
I Googled that as well, because I thought I was a cat lady. I mean, I'm the mad cat woman, but I'd never heard of. They're quite a rare breed, aren't they?
I don't know. Yeah, I've got two snowshoe cats, which we were told when we got them as kittens that they were sort of Siamese. And
that's right. They come from Siamese breeding. Yeah.
They've only been around for about 30 years, I think. Particular breed, but yeah, they are. everyone's going to have to Google it now, who's listening.
Yeah, I'm going to have to Google this.
Well, because me and Liz have both got cats, but my cat hates me. I say this on a regular basis on the podcast.
Have I ever even seen your cat?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's because she hates me.
I know what I was going to ask you. Are you a Jane Austen fan, given that you have a Jane Austen Tea Room mystery series?
Oh, yes. Yes, I definitely am a Jane Austen fan. Yes, I became a Jane Austen fan at the age of 15. When I was at school studying for my GCSE literature, and we were studying books. I won't mention the books because lots of people love these books and I hate them, and it's going to make me very unpopular. But we were forced to study these books, which I hated, and it's put me off book clubs for life as well. But we had the one chance to write an essay for our GCSE that had to be submitted for our coursework on any sort of literary author. And I didn't really read much. I'd sort of given up reading for pleasure because of what we were forced to read. And my mum suggested I read Pride and Prejudice, and that would be a really good book to do for an essay for your English literature GCSE. And that was it. I was just, I moved straight on to Sense and Sensibility, and I wrote my essay. And I got an A. It's the only A I got.
it was meant to be, clearly.
And after I'd done the essay, I moved on to all her other books as well. So, yeah, massive fan. I've always been a massive fan of hers. And in fact, I was on holiday in Bath a couple of weeks ago, and I was outside one of the places that she lived. In fact, the place that she lived when she first came to Sidmouth. And I went straight outside there and, you know, dragging my family along to all the places that Jane Austen went in Bath. So
It's got to be done. Yeah. Which one is your favourite?
Now, well, it alternates between Persuasion and Pride and Prejudice. Sometimes it's Persuasion because it's just a little bit maturer, and the sort of the theme of the second chance between the couple in that one is really endearing. And then I love Pride and Prejudice as well because it was set in Hertfordshire, and or most of it's set in Hertfordshire, which is where I was living at the time when I was 15 and I first read it. So that was amazing. And so, yeah, it's both, really.
Did I hear you say you were a fan of J.K. Rowling or just that J.K. Rowling?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Oh, great. I loved all those Harry Potter books. And the thing, when they were being published, I was a head teacher of a big primary school. And I used to love seeing the children sitting on the playground reading Harry Potter books. She did more for reading in primary schools than anybody's done for a long, long time.
Yeah.
I'm a great fan of Harry Potter and J.K. Rowling.
Yes. I wanted to see what all the fuss was about. You know, it can't be that good. And do you know what it was?
It was.
So thinking about you were saying about one of the things you like about Persuasion is the more mature characters. Was that a conscious decision with making Charlotte and Angus, you know, perhaps slightly older than your average protagonist?
That wasn't. It was my characters tend to be a little bit older just because I'm that little bit older now and I can kind of forget what it's like to be young. So
oh, you're still a baby.
There's no hope for some of us, Carol, isn't there?
I think with older characters you can have more of a backstory as well.
Yes.
Issues.
Yeah.
And so younger characters, obviously, you know, they have real life concerns, etc. Absolutely. But with older people, there's ex-husbands and ex-wives and bad jobs and problems that they've had and kids, and so yeah, there's a lot more material if you've got an older character.
Yeah, there's more baggage, isn't there, when you think about it. Yeah. And when you described Angus, some of the people have listened to this on a regular basis. I was in a murder mystery room a few weeks ago and it was run by two ex-detectives from down south, and Angus is one of them. You described him to a T. So every time I read your books now and visualise Angus, this policeman's going to come into my mind. So thank you for that. It was very nice.
Take it. You see, that's a good thing.
I think that's an excellent. Yes,
your happy place.
Especially about the bit about pushing his glasses up his nose. Oh, yeah. Yes.
So what's next, Susie, do you think?
So I'm currently writing the second Tea Room book set in Sidmouth, and which is very helpful at the moment because it's Sidmouth Folk Festival this week, and the second book is set during the folk festival, actually. So Ooh. I've been doing lots of research, watching Morris dancers and such, which I love. I love watching Morris dancers. And I'm also writing the seventh book in the Exeter series as well. So that is, I know I shouldn't be writing them both at the same time, but I kind of am.
How many books do you get through a year? I mean, write, not read.
Only about two, which I know some people say, wow, that's amazing. But my books are fairly short. There's 40,000 words. So, yeah, I probably write the equivalent of what other people write one book if they're writing 80 to 100,000.
Yeah.
Try as I may, I can't seem to write longer books.
So your new series are similar size books, similar length books?
Slightly more, 50,000 for that one.
Yeah. I think the thing is that sometimes you find length and that's your kind of your sweet spot, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So my books are usually between 45 and 55 thousand words. Mm. So yeah, I know where you're coming from. Mine finish when they come to an end.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I don't try and pad them out. They come to a natural conclusion. Mm. So I finish them. I suspect it's the same for you.
Yeah, I mean, I find I have had sort of, you know, reviews and comments saying that they're not long enough. I mean, usually it's in a good way, saying it wasn't long enough. And I have thought about, you know, but sort of trying to make them longer. But I think it would just completely change my style and
that formatting.
So maybe in the future I will write books that are longer, but at the moment,
but your plots are very fast paced and you have a lot going on. So, and if you kind of, you know, added more other stuff, that would kind of slow the pace down, which you know would make it a different book, I think.
I think if you've got you know, a good following and people love your books, you just do what comes naturally. You know, that's the thing. What do your family think of your writing? Are they dead proud of you?
Yeah, my husband's absolutely fantastic and supportive, and I couldn't ask for more. Honestly, he's so helpful, and he does read my books, and he's very good at sort of not commenting too much and just making sure that there's nothing glaringly wrong. But he tends to sort of leave it all up to me, if, you know, rather than sort of say you should do this or you should do that. And
well, I'd have the opposite reaction. So my husband doesn't go anywhere near mine. Horses for courses, that's what I say. Oh, well, it's been absolutely brilliant talking to you, Susie, and maybe we can all get together again and talk about your new series when you've got 2 or 3 under your belt. That'd be good.
Definitely.
If you want to come back on, that would be lovely.
I would love to.
So thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production, produced by John Bissett. The music In Peril was composed and recorded by OM Studio Strings.